Welcome, members and guests, to the January 31st program of the City Club of Eugene. Welcome to our TV audiences on Community Television and the Oregon Wind Network. I'm Marty Wilde, City Club President. Our sponsors today are Sacred Earth Botanicals, Marilyn Milne, Public Relations Services, and KLCC, excuse me, as always, for airing our programs on Monday night, as well as KPFF consulting engineers for our office space. We thank you for listening. These programs are free for our listening audience, yet there are costs involved. Your contribution will help keep our organization healthy. Your membership is tax deductible, and it also qualifies for a tax credit on your Oregon taxes, your state taxes, not your federal taxes, through the Oregon Cultural Trust, making it essentially free. See www.culturaltrust.org/donate for details. Today is, let me introduce Rob Zacho, who will introduce our program today.
Thank you, Marty. My name is Rob Zacho, and I'm the Executive Director of Better Eugene Springfield Transit, or BEST for short, a new nonprofit advocating for a regional transit system that fosters prosperity, social equity, and a healthy natural environment. Thank you, the City Club, for hosting today's program. Our topic today is the role of transit in our community vision, or a shorter title is simply, why transit? Why have transit at all? What purpose does it serve? What benefits do a strong transit system provide? How does transit support the things we value as a community and our vision for the future? To be sure, we could talk about other questions. What type of transit do we want to have? Who should it serve? Where should it go? Where should it run? How do we pay for it? And so on. These are important questions, but they're secondary to the question of why. We need to understand why transit is important, if indeed it is, before figuring out how to make it happen. In particular, today's program is definitely not about the question of whether bus rapid transit in West Eugene is a good idea or not. That is an important topic, but practically speaking, it is a debate that has been decided. The West Eugene MX project has all needed approvals, funding, mostly from federal and state sources, is lined up, detailed engineering work is underway, construction is expected to start in 2015, with the line opening in 2017. For today's program, we have lined up a panel of three citizens who are decidedly not experts. They wanted me to stress this, that these people are not transit experts. We don't have anybody here from LTD. But they're here to get the conversation going and to present a few different perspectives. And we're interested in hearing your perspectives. After their opening remarks, we'll open up for questions and answers, but also welcome your comments, and you may have some other points of view. So today we have three panelists. Larry Banks is an architect and partner at Pivot Architecture. He has led the way on some of Pivot's most challenging and complex projects. He will talk about transit from the perspective of business and the economy. Claire Surrett is the executive director of the Lane Coalition for Healthy and Active Youth, or ELCHE, which is working to prevent childhood obesity through advocacy and action. Claire is also a city councilor, but she is here today representing ELCHE and will be speaking from the perspective of social justice. And finally, Julie Daniel is executive director of Bring Recycling, a nonprofit working to help people understand how the stuff we use shapes the planet we share. She'll talk about why transit is important for the environment. So we'll begin our program with Larry. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Rob. So good afternoon. Let's talk some transit today. I'd like to talk a little bit kind of regionally, locally, and personally, and I want to weave together some threads about jobs, planning, and buzz. And I'll get more to that later. My daughter plays the violin in the Eugene Youth Symphony, and they had their winter concert last night. And so I'm sitting there in the audience, and I'm basking in the music, and I'm trying to think of the right metaphor for this speech today, right, talk today. And I'll spare you because I never found one. But I'm sitting there looking up at all these young people on the stage there, talented, ambitious, and I thought to myself, they are why we're doing all of this, right? They're why we care. They're why you're here every Friday talking about our community and trying to plan for a better future. So think about that. Think out 20 years from now. It's 2034. What does our community look like? Where do people work? Where do people live? How do people get around? That's a lot of people and bikes and cars and pedestrians and all the rest of that. So you just have to think about what our city is going to look like. What will City Club look like in 20 years? You think about that for a minute, too. But I digress. So regionally, I think a robust transit system is essential to a long-term economic development strategy and jobs. And I think a lot of you get that we need to continue to build jobs in our area to fund kind of our quality of life. The economic development landscape has changed a lot recently. It is so competitive. Businesses everywhere are trying to get a leg up, compete for employees, places to have their business. Not just new business, but growing our businesses here. We have so many small startups and helping them to be successful. I think there's a lot of quality of life kinds of issues that business leaders are thinking about. Think about the cities that you visit, cities that you admire, you love to go to. That's our competition. So how do we distinguish ourselves here in our community to attract the best employees for tomorrow? And that's where I think that having some buzz about our community is really important. I think we need to work harder to sell Eugene Springfield as a great area. And I think that transit plays a vital role in that because that's what people are looking for. You also hear a lot about the millennials, the creative class, sort of the new generation. We certainly hear a lot about that, talk about that in our firm. They're looking, they just have different values than a lot of us. When I was younger, you know, 16, I wanted a car, right? And a car meant freedom. And a lot of people now that we have around, I'm talking to younger people, freedom means no car payment. Freedom means I've got debt out of school, or I can't find work, I can't afford a car, I can't afford a second car. Digressing. I think locally, how many of you have heard of Envision Eugene? How many of you have the seven pillars laminated up on your refrigerator like I do in the glove box when I do drive? Not very often. Or up at work. So that was our community vision for growth. I was on the community resource group, kind of unprecedented gathering of ideas to inform what I feel like is a great vision for the future. A lot of synergy there with the pillars of Envision Eugene and transit, kind of relying on the fact that transit would continue to move forward and vice versa. I think transit is fundamental to a lot of those pillars, but especially economic opportunity, compact development, efficient transportation, and neighborhood livability. You think for a minute about our city, our wonderful hillsides that we value, our farmland, our wetlands, our neighborhoods. There's a lot of parameters that we need to work with. Where are we going to accommodate the 34,000 more people that we'll have in 20 years, or the 15,000 more that Springfield will have in 20 years? That's a lot more, you know, that's like a big chunk of Springfield sort of replicated again. Where will those people go? So imagine the vision of some of our main transit corridors that you already know what they are, but if you could have more focused development along there, transit supported, you can have commerce, office, shopping, some residential nearby. I feel like a lot of you know this already, but I also feel like it's kind of walking off a log, but a lot of people still don't get that. I feel like that's my vision of connecting our entire community within a quarter mile of key transit corridors. That's also what transit-oriented development is all about, and I'm sure many of you have heard about that. The notion that some public investment in these fixed route corridors can spur economic development from the private sector. And I think the great thing about this is it's been going on long enough now that there's real studies and you can see the effects 5, 10, 15 years after some of these have been put into place. And you can see the benefits of connectivity, how businesses have followed, and the success of that. And that's not just large metropolitan areas. That's also cities and areas of comparable size to ours. That's cities like Provo and Orem, Utah, Fort Collins, Vancouver, Washington. I think a lot of communities are having success with even BRT-styled systems in terms of having that kind of development and planning. And I think those strategies can work here and will work here. Lastly, I think as a business owner, transit is great for our staff. We have always been supporters of the Group Pass program. We took a survey a little while ago. 40% of our staff ride transit at least once a week. We have 33 people at Pivot. And so that's quite a few people riding the bus. We also know that we're competing with other communities. We've had the benefit of hiring people in the last few years. We have some people from Colorado, Hawaii, Florida, Kansas City. We're marketing hard. These people have choices. A lot of them, they want to come to the Northwest. Tell me about Eugene. We have literature that we mail them. We mail them care packages. We send them links to websites. They're curious about the quality of life, and they're certainly taking transit into consideration. Transit's also great to get around for meetings at LCC, meetings at the U of O. 10-minute frequency is huge when you are trying to rely on getting back to the office or getting back to a meeting. So I think that for our community to thrive, to prosper, to maximize livability for all citizens, including the youth of today, and to be a great modern city, we need a healthy economy, we need buzz, and we need a robust transit system. So that's sort of my personal business view. Claire's up next to talk about social equity. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Larry. So I've been asked to present on the social equity aspect of how we envision transit for our community. And the perspective I bring to this issue comes from many years advocating for fair treatment and the inclusion of marginalized communities in public policy through my work at the Eugene Springfield Solidarity Network and the ACLU of Oregon, as well as many volunteer activities. And at the Lane Coalition for Healthy Active Youth, we view equity as critical to creating our vision of community, which is one in which all children lead healthy, active lives fueled by nutritious food. And I believe it's a fundamental promise of this country that we provide equal opportunities for all people, regardless of social status or background. I served on the Mayor's Task Force for Sustainable Business Development back in 2005, I think that was. And I was there actually specifically to provide a worker's perspective and help develop the social equity piece of the triple bottom line. And this is still an aspect of sustainability that needs more attention and consideration, in my view, and so I'm very pleased to be here today to address it. So what is generally meant when we use the term social equity? Wikipedia has some very good information on the topic, including this statement. Social sustainability is the least defined and least understood of the three pillars of sustainability and sustainable development. The triad of environmental sustainability, economic sustainability, and social sustainability is widely accepted as a model for addressing sustainability, yet the social aspect has had considerably less attention in the public dialogue. So the concept of social sustainability encompasses such topics as livability, health equity, community development, social capital, human rights, labor rights, social justice, cultural competency, community resilience, and human adaptation. At its core, social equity means considering the impacts, positive or negative, on employees and community of any particular activity. Examples of social equity business practices that benefit employees are providing paid sick time, health insurance, on-site childcare, flexible work schedules, and democratic workplace mechanisms such as labor management committees. Social equity practices that apply to the wider community might include financial sponsorship of cultural events or nonprofit activities, providing a space for community to gather, providing paid time for employees to volunteer in the community. And we have some great examples here in Eugene of businesses providing social equity benefits to both employees and community. Glory Bee Foods, the most recent recipient of the city's Bold Step Award, and Pacific Continental Bank both provide their employees with paid time to volunteer in the community. So how would we apply a social equity lens to our vision of transit? The 8 through 80 concept provides a framework for looking at how the system can serve people age 8 through age 80, and therefore serve the majority of the population. Here in Eugene, we are especially known for embracing equality and fairness as a community value, and we work to make that a reality. And that has made Eugene a national leader in some very important ways. For many years, Eugene has enjoyed a national reputation for being especially accessible for people with mobility impairments. We have at various times been designated the second most accessible city in the country. And Lane Transit District in particular has created one of the most accessible transit systems in the country for people with disabilities, in part because of its robust paratransit service. So if we are to fully embrace social equity in our vision for transit, we are looking to create a system that provides access for people of any income, but particularly those of lower income who may not be able to afford a car, people with disabilities, rural residents, the elderly who may no longer wish to drive, and youth who are not yet able to drive. We are also providing transit that provides all of these people with access to jobs, education, resources and services, as well as cultural, social, and recreation opportunities, all important to creating a vibrant community. And of course, there is an intersection between social equity benefits and those of the other two pillars of sustainability, environmental and economic benefits in the form of reduced air pollution and other environmental benefits, and the creation of a prosperous economy that provides for good wages, a strong tax base, and other related benefits. So finally, I'll just leave you with a little bit of information about who we're speaking about as we talk about creating social equity in our transit. This is from an LTD survey that included folks who are only 16 years or older. And this survey found that 1 in 3 LTD riders are completely dependent on transit. Conversely, 42% have both a car and a driver's license, so they are choosing to use transit. Nearly 2/3 of LTD riders are under the age of 30. And only 6% reported being 60 years or older. 2/3 of LTD riders have incomes less than $25,000 a year. 59% are students, 17% are employed non-students, and then 27% are both unemployed and non-students. So now I will turn it over to Julie Daniel, who will talk to you about the environmental benefits.
So how many people rode a bus here today or came on MX? Besides me, a few of you did. How many of you have ridden a bus or been on MX this week? Okay, it's not too bad. So here we are. I think that the City Club audience here today and the LCC audience listening in, this is a group of people that cares really deeply about conservation and protecting the environment. I'd say it's one of our most widely held core community values. The environment is the number one reason that people cite when they're asked, why is this a great place to live? Our commitment to those values is expressed in dozens of ways. Our passion for local foods and farmers markets, our zealous dedication to recycling. 95% of households recycle regularly, and Lane County boasts the highest waste recovery rates in Oregon. We've enthusiastically adopted a broad range of energy and water conservation practices. We use our soaker hoses. We landscape with native plants. We dig up our lawns and plant vegetables. We insulate our homes. We install low-flow showerheads, buy LED and compact fluorescent light bulbs. We've banned plastic bags. Many of us are consciously making efforts to reduce our impact on the planet that supports us. And our concern for the environment goes well beyond our personal lives. We expect it in our institutions, too. We elect local representatives that support those conservation values. If you look at the Oregon League of Conservation Voters 2013 scorecard, it shows that as a group, Eugene state senators and representatives consistently score among the highest in the state. We're proud that LCC and the University of Oregon are national leaders in college sustainability network initiatives. And the City of Eugene has a detailed climate and energy action plan, a volunteer sustainability commission, and a staff that's working successfully to reduce the city's own internal carbon footprint. we really get how important it is for us to address climate change. A 2012 telephone survey conducted by DHM Research for the City of Eugene's Climate and Energy Action Plan found that 77% of Eugene residents agreed that climate change is occurring because of human causes like burning fossil fuels, as in our cars. 81% felt that climate change requires us to entirely rethink our behaviors. Another 75% felt that climate change requires much stronger regulation of greenhouse gas emissions. I think we really recognize that a healthy environment is not some pie-in-the-sky ideal. It's essential for a vibrant economy and a healthy community. So given all this, it's puzzling to me why we're not jumping up and down with joy and anticipation at the development of a robust transit system. It's as if we have a sort of collective community blind spot when it comes to recognizing the impact of our own private vehicle use as our preferred method to get around. Private vehicle use is the single largest contributor to household carbon emissions. Using alternative transportation is one of the most effective strategies we have available to reduce our own carbon footprint. It's far ahead of more expensive options like installing new energy-efficient furnaces or windows. Each person that switches from a car to a bus for a daily round-trip commute, say about 20 miles, realizes 2.5-ton reduction in annual carbon emissions. Yet 3/4 of the trips we make around town are still made by one person in a car. So what's it going to take to get more of us out of our cars and ditch those cars a little bit? Of all the behavior changes that we need to make to adapt to climate change, I think breaking the auto habit is a top contender, and it's one of the most difficult. Our desire for autonomy and spontaneity, combined with the fast pace many of us live our lives, make some hurdles, no matter how much we value the environment. When it comes to getting around town, we want to be able to get up and go when we feel like it. We want to be sure we can get to our destination on time. We find planning trips and figuring out bus schedules and connections a bother. You know I do. I grew up in a London suburb where public transportation is a way of life. I never had to use a timetable. I only had to know what time the last bus got home so I didn't get in trouble. And then I headed out, confident that my ride would be there in a few minutes, and it was. When I moved to Eugene, I found the bus system inconvenient to use, frankly. Until the MX routes went in, I drove my car just about any time I couldn't make a bike or walking trip work. My limitations to biking and walking are really time and distance. If it's too far or takes me too long, I use the car. With just 2 routes in place of the MX lines, our fledgling transit system has already extended my ability to go carless. I can walk or ride to a line, knowing I won't have to wait more than a few minutes to get on a bus, and I hop on. I've cut my auto use hugely and saved myself a ton of money with very little loss of convenience, and I can't wait for the system to reach more areas of town. And that's why I personally believe that rapid transit is such a good fit for our community and really rounds out our bus system, our regular bus system. It meets our needs for autonomy and spontaneity. It's fast, it's frequent, it's easy to understand. The buses run every 10 minutes, so there's no schedule to figure out. The routes are fixed along major transportation corridors that most of us need to head to. They don't change. Transit makes it possible for more of us to go carless. It gives us a viable choice. A fully built-out transit system offers us one of the best opportunities we have to protect the environment and create the kind of community that reflects our values. I hope this presentation inspires everyone here and everyone listening out in KLCC land to get on board with transit if they're not already. I look forward to the day when we embrace transit with the same enthusiasm we demonstrate for the many other systems that help us reduce our carbon footprint. From my point of view, that day can't come any too soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry, Claire, and Julie. Now that we've heard from 3 non-experts present their own personal views. We welcome your questions and your views. What is the role of transit in our community vision, or simply, why transit? Let's take a break and 5 minutes for the tables. On your tables, you'll find a couple copies of fact sheets that I prepared, which shows facts and figures about LTD. And actually, long before LTD, back in the 60s, we had Emerald Transit, a private transit company providing bus service with VW microvans driving around. So let's talk for a few minutes, and we'll have your questions.
You're listening to KLCC Eugene 89.7, KLCO Newport 90.5, KLFR Reedsport 89.1, at 88.1, KLBR Bend, KLFO Florence, KMPQ Roseburg, and on the web, klcc.org.
Welcome back. For our KLCC audience, you're listening to the City Club of Eugene with a program on the role of transit in our community vision. We're here today. I'm Rob Zaka with Better Eugene Springfield Transit. Our panelists are Larry Banks with Pivot Architecture, Claire Surrett with the Lane Coalition for Healthy and Active Youth, and Julie Daniel with Bring Recycling. And now to your questions and comments about why transit.
Okay, Bob Hart, a member since 2013, and I've actually got to ask a question for two tables. First question is, why is there no public transit to the airport? That seems like a no-brainer. And then secondly, how about MX service to places like LCC, the airport again, and Florence, part of our county?
Let me take a stab at this, and I'm going to again reiterate that none of us at this table are experts.
Speculate.
But I will speculate. I think in terms of service to the airport, it's probably an economic question about what the cost would be and how many people go there.
And I have a little insight on that as well. It also has to do with the schedule of the flights. The majority of flights go out at around 6 o'clock in the morning, a bulk of them, and so bus service would have to begin at about 4 a.m. So in terms of scheduling shifts and making that economically pencil out, it just has not so far. You know, I wonder if the airport is successful in locating a hotel and conference center out there, which is something they have envisioned, that might change the economics on that.
Let me respond to the question about LCC. I do know a little bit more about that. The community and your fact sheets on our table talk about this. There's a long-range transportation plan for our whole metropolitan area and envisions at least considering MX routes, bus rapid transit routes, and all the major corridors. And so there are discussions starting about having MX go from downtown Springfield to Lane Community College and going from downtown Eugene to Lane Community College. So that's certainly on the docket. And in terms of going to Florence, Lane Transit District extends as far west as Veneta and then stops, and that's how it's authorized. And I don't know the details of that. I think there's an economic consideration of providing bus service to Florence, but as of right now, I don't know whether that's possible for LTD to do because it's not in their jurisdiction. Maybe that's something that could change.
John DeLow, City Club, and I'm a rail buff, and I want to know if any of you people want to discourse on light rail in the area here.
Light rail. You know, one of the things I was actually thinking about in terms of rail was part of the buzz of you of our area should be loud enough to keep the attention of the decision makers to the north of us and keep us at the south terminus of future rail corridor connections and how great that is for commerce. Specifically to your question about light rail, I don't have the facts because I'm not an expert, but I do know just how much more 10, 15, multitudes of factors more costly for light rail. And so part of bus rapid transit is the ability to get a lot of those advantages of light rail at a fraction of the cost. And I think that's why this is just blossoming in interest across the country and really around the world.
Jerry Smith, City Club member. My question is about older people who are not considered disabled, but really can't make it to the bus stop from the hill they live on. What's available for them in terms of being able to get to church or do the other things, go shopping?
So I do think that's a challenge with where bus stops are located in terms of how far someone has to travel from their front door to that stop, and if they have some mobility impairments, even if they're not technically disabled by some standard. And that can apply, you know, no matter what age you're at, if you have an injury, even temporarily. So the LTD does offer the Ride Source, which is a paratransit service that provides door-to-door rides for eligible seniors. I don't know what the eligibility requirement is, and people with disabilities who aren't able to ride on the fixed route public transit. And just for some context, the information I received from LTD says since 2001, ridership has increased by more than 100% on that service, and LTD now provides close to 80,000 Ride Source trips a year. So there are some alternatives. They may not be available to everybody, but there are some out there. So I'd encourage folks to look into LTD's Ride Source paratransit service if that's a challenge that you're having.
Bob Cassidy, City Club member. 20 years ago, we were talking about use of the tracks from Veneta to put a trolley on to bring it into Eugene. Having a vision of Eugene that includes a wider area, particularly for transit, you know, Junction City or Cresswell, Cottage Grove, the rail transport is something that we've talked about. What is the hang-up about not getting even a vision of this kind of thing, a plan for how we could start bringing in this is half our city. 70% of the workers in Veneta work in Eugene. 50% in Springfield work in Eugene. From all over they're coming. And that's part of our city. They got to park their car someplace. We've got to have parking space for them. But what is the hang-up why we can't get something like this in the vision?
I think that's a real good question, Bob, and once again, I don't know the answer. I will say what I do know is that there are an increasing number of people who are living in Veneta, and as you say, there's a lot of traffic going back and forth, and so there's certainly demand for transportation options getting back and forth. I think once again, it may be a question of economics. I think as we as a community look of where we can take limited federal and state funds and where to invest those to improve things, while there are people living in Veneta, that may not be the next choice of where to do that, and so we're trying to build out the core of the system first. In terms of getting to Veneta, we're not a major metropolitan area. We may not be able to economically justify a commuter rail, but perhaps something like bus rapid transit going out at Veneta at some point in time might make more sense for a community. The last thing I'd say is that in these discussions, we have certain government entities or forums for having conversations, and Eugene, Springfield, and Coburg talk to each other quite a bit about transportation issues because they're part of a group called the Metropolitan Planning Organization or Metropolitan Policy Committee. Veneta's not part of that, and so it's not that those conversations can't take place, but it's more difficult to even sort of raise those issues. So maybe the answer is that we don't have that as part of our vision because we're not talking about it. And so maybe the first thing to do is to begin talking about that.
You know, I would add briefly, I think the notion of the park and ride is something that maybe we overlook in our emphasis on the vehicles themselves. But to be able to have park and ride and drive in 5 miles from out of town and park and avoid the remaining miles and the parking downtown, I think that's huge, and I think that for those outlying communities where I think the economics just don't work, I think that's part of the solution of transit.
And let me add on to that, Larry. You remind me, this is Rob here, as the West Eugene MX is being designed and engineered, LTD and its consultants are responding to things they're hearing from the general public and from business owners and people along the route and making changes. And I've seen some of those plans, and one is to move the western terminal of this to the parking lot of Walmart. Walmart has a lot of parking spaces, and so the MX station is actually going to be in Walmart's parking lot. And I don't know if there are plans to take some of those spaces as park and ride, but again, I don't know, but it would seem that people could come from Veneta, park somewhere out there, and then get on MX and come on in. Thank you.
Ron Kilcoin, City Club member. What actions can LTD take to overcome the barriers that keep people from using transit?
Yeah, so I think kind of the question we got earlier about someone with who may not use a wheelchair but may have some mobility impairment, and also youth, in thinking about that 8 through 80 concept, how far does someone have to travel on foot before they can get the bus? What kind of landscape are they traveling through to get there? You know, personal safety is an issue for folks as you get out of your car, which is a nice big secure box that you're in, is something to take into account. So I understand, you know, as a transit system, there's a lot of competing demands on the system, and you can't accommodate everything. But just thinking on the ground level, as you stand at your driveway or your front door, what are you going to be encountering as you go to make this trip? And I think as planners think about where bus stops are, how long between routes, and what time, what time is the service coming, those are all ways that we can start to address the particular needs of part of the community, and then expand that to reach everyone in the community as best we're able.
And I'll weigh on this is Julie Daniel. I'll weigh on this a little bit. I mean, for a lot of people, it has to do with frequency and just the difficulty of navigating a system that depends on looking things up in a book and or online. I mean, it's a pretty dense sort of timetable to get yourself through. One thing that I think might help, which obviously has a cost, is I love the boards that they have on the MX line that says "next bus in 6 minutes." Mm-hmm. You know, those are really, really helpful. And if we were able to have more visual clues about when the bus was coming, apart from having to dive into a timetable guide or go online, I think that would make it easier for people to understand how frequently the buses run. Because besides the MX system, there are corridors in the community where there's enough different bus lines running that the service is actually pretty frequent. And it's just hard. I mean, you know, I just have sort of a blind spot about doing that, whereas the MX is so easy for me because I know that if a bus leaves as I walk up, I have 9.5 minutes to wait. And that's just about my attention span, so that's good. So I think that's one of the big deals is frequency and letting people know in some kind of a visually easier way how often those buses run.
Let me add to that, Julie, and I'm going to confess that everybody up at this table is probably older than 40 or so.
A lot older.
And Julie, you were talking about the millennials and how they're choosing not to have cars and how they approach things different. And I think if I were a millennial, I would say, screw that board. Pardon me, my French. I get out my smartphone, and there'd be an app for that. And the TriMet system up in Portland open sources their schedule information. I understand that there are 60 third-party apps for your iPhone to help you use transit. You know, and so I believe some of that's starting to happen here, and you just put it on your smartphone, and you look at it, and I want to get there, and it's all GPS, and you're good to go.
Oh, I think that's brilliant.
Jerry Diethelm, City Club. Some of us are even older than 40. and growing up in Seattle, the trolley came every 5 minutes and took you all over the city. Right. And so at 75, living in Eugene, I wonder, when are we going to catch up with the past, in effect? I mean, when a young person could ride halfway across the city and go swimming in Lake Washington. I mean, that's what I look forward to, something like that in Eugene. But let me just say, I'm the only member at the table, so I'm sort of carrying up non-member questions. You know, and what I wanted to commend the best for, you know, better Eugene Springfield transportation, is the idea of building a community vision that might answer questions like the ones coming from this table. For example, what is LTD planning for rapid? How are they going to put rapid transit through the South Willamette corridor? You know, the question is, are they? You know, it's like if you had a vision, you could say our major transportation corridors will all, when we can manage it somehow, be animated with rapid transit. You know, that
Does our vision have that in it now? I mean, the question is, like, how are they doing it? So instead of I'm asking or answering little short-term questions, we might say, how does that question relate to our long-term plan? Are we really going to do that? I mean, they say, how are we going to get to the airport with buses? Should the long-term vision say, we are planning to connect all our transport systems together and connect the airport to our downtown in the long run? I mean, is that in our plan or not? Or about Bonita? All these things. Here's the other question. It's just, why has there been such a problem getting MX through West 11th? See, these are the questions that people ask just normally, and our transportation vision probably should answer that.
This is Rob again with Better Eugene Springfield Transit, and let me take a stab. That's a lot of questions. I don't know if I can answer all of them, but you were talking, Jerry, about vision in our community. I'm going to quote John Fregonisi, is a well-known planner out of Portland who helped develop the Metro 2040 concept plan, which is how that metropolitan area is growing. And I've heard him on multiple times say, vision without action is hallucination. And he'll show a picture of, I think, a caterpillar from Through the Looking Glass, Alice in Wonderland, smoking some sort of pipe. I don't know what that's on, but some sort of great visions. And I think part of the question that your table's raising, Jerry, is that it's not enough just to have general visions. We need to figure out how to make those real. And I think that we have good visions in our community. I think we could do better, figure out how to make those happen. Some of our visions are good, but a little vague, and so it's not quite clear, well, what did we mean when we said we want to get MX from downtown Eugene to LCC? Where exactly was that going to go? How does that connect with other things we're talking about, say South Willamette Street, say Civic Stadium? Is that part of the conversation? In other cases, maybe we have a clear idea of what we want to do. We just have a really hard time as a community getting on board, if you will. So good questions. I don't know that we have all the answers, but I think by talking about it, we can get better answers. Thank you.
Betty Hosokawa, City Club member. A question about park and ride. I live in a neighborhood where I'm about two, maybe a block and a half from a bus stop, but I can only use it if I want to leave around 8 in the morning and then not return until after 3. I am not far from the Walnut node, but there's no parking. So I could drive to the Walnut node on the MX, but there is no park and ride. There's no way I can use that. So are there any plans for a park and ride in that area?
This is Larry Banks. I don't know. I was thinking about this earlier when I blurted out park and ride without thinking a whole lot. But wouldn't it maybe a vision, an ideal would be that at every MX stop, there was a place for people to park? Because part of this whole system is when you have all of the fingers of more dense corridors with frequent service, how do you get then from the neighborhoods if you're not two blocks from that corridor? You could have more bicycle parking for those who could ride bicycles. You could have a lot of covered sidewalks that finger out into neighborhoods. But you could also have small park and rides. But I think the economics are going to not work out for that. Land is too valuable for more parking spaces.
I think democratic governance is part of social sustainability. And while I'm not generally sympathetic to the critics of LTD, one part that it has got my attention is the fact that it's a gubernatorially appointed oversight board and not a directly elected one. And so some of the critics have been saying, well, if we can't vote on it, we should be at least be able to vote for the people who are making these decisions. So do you think there is a role in the future for direct election of the transit commissioners? So, or directors, so that there'd be more democratic governance in that.
I'd take a stab at that one.
You want to take a stab, Julie?
I'll take a stab at that one because the reason that it's a, you know, and I understand, I just learned this at this table from these great facts about transit, that the system, you know, as you know, is funded by payroll tax on employers. And when the business community came together to form LTD and agreed to fund it, they wanted to make sure that they had, you know, representation on how it was governed. So it's appointed by the governor. If we want to have transit with a board that we elect, shouldn't we all be funding transit? Should there not be some other funding mechanism apart from it just being, you know, funded by the business payroll tax? So that's where I go. Representation comes with responsibility.
I think we've got time for one more question.
Randy Prince.
No, we've got to wrap up.
Randy Prince, City Club member.
6 minutes.
Appreciated the fact sheet showing some of the basic overview of transit in Eugene, that we do have that base of people who are young and lower income, making up maybe a quarter of our ridership. The biggest part of current transit being the college students, 56%. And a relatively small sector of, say, people going to work who would be a much larger sector in the larger cities in our region, in Seattle and Portland, you see, or San Francisco, where transit ridership is high, the things that we are aspiring to. And so I'm wondering, is the vision, what is the vision of the future to shape this more transit-oriented Eugene-Springfield area? What type of trips do you think we should go for first? And I recognize the importance of the transit-oriented development will reshape the landscape for where things are located. But are we looking to provide better transit service for people who are shopping or for people who are going to an employment destination? Like Julie, you mentioned how wonderful it is to be able to ride to work, but you're one of the lucky few that has a place of employment right next to the BRT.
Oh, we deliberately did that.
Yes. And there are some others, such as the hospital out in the Springfield Riverbend area. But I'm wondering, what do you see as the best way to build the transit ridership? Because even in cities where we have high transit ridership, people will choose to use their cars for certain types of trips, and ride transit for other types. It may be for going to work that they ride to transit, or it may be that they drive to work. But what do you see as our best bet to build a more transit-oriented city, to go for employment, shopping, other types of trips, beyond the university and those people who, due to income factors and age, are not able to have the car option?
So, Randy, I'm hearing sort of a two-part question from you. You're asking about the vision and what our vision is, and I don't know that we at this table are here to tell the committee what their vision should be, but we can offer some views. And the second part of that I'm hearing is sort of how do we make that happen, sort of where are the best opportunities are, how do we build it out? And maybe we might hear from our three panelists and each give sort of their own personal responses to that, starting with Larry.
This is Larry. I think it's going to rely on a combination of people choosing to use transit to get to work, and that is work at all different times of the day or the evening. It's not just 8 to 5. It's all sorts of split shifts. I think it's also people who are running errands during the middle of the day. I think it is also people who leave work early and collect their child at childcare. I think it's going to take all of that. And again, I think that's the synergy of all of the different businesses that and economic opportunities happening along those corridors.
Yeah, so this is Claire, and I agree with Rob. I don't think it's our job to tell our community what the vision should be, but I think, you know, traditionally the transit system has been aimed at the commuter or the carless person, and I think one of the advantages that the MX has demonstrated is by having that consistent schedule and knowing when that bus is going to show up, yeah, it gives reliability and a sense of security to be able to do other things besides just get myself to my job or to school. And so I think we can start marketing this to people who want to travel to certain business districts. My neighborhood, Whitaker, is now a thriving bar and brewery district, and I think if we had expanded schedules in the evening, we could have people riding transit to those parts of our town rather than driving their cars to go out for a drink. And we could also be thinking, you know, we have had in the past programs to support younger students, high school students in particular, taking the bus to school, and if we could recover some funding for that. So we could start marketing to particular sectors of our community that aren't thinking about how the transit could serve them, create a system that's reliable there, we see it, we can get on it easily, and then we'll get more people riding it.
Yeah, and I would sort of reiterate that and go, the frequency of transit is really the key to making it more accessible to more people. And I understand if you live, yes, Bring is located a block away from a transit stop, but I'm located over a mile away from my home and a transit stop, but that is a 20-minute walk. And so that is a doable thing for me. So I will walk down to Dadsgate, that's my nearest stop, hop on the bus on some days, or I'll ride my bike down there and then put my bike on the bus. It basically, a transit system that operates every 10 minutes where you don't have to think about schedule really expands the number of people who can get somewhere and get to that transit line. And I think that's absolutely key. So getting that system built out further so there are more people who are within that 15, 20-minute walk or 10-minute bike ride, that will increase the number of people who are able to usefully use transit.
I want to jump in here and take an opportunity to talk about the vision a little bit more and a point that Larry started to bring up but maybe didn't stress enough, Randy. I was in Denver for a conference in August, and their airport is out in the middle of nowhere. It's like 10 miles from metropolitan Denver. There's nothing but vacant land around there. They can build roads, 10, 12 lanes wide because they've got a ton of land. The Eugene-Springfield metropolitan area is not Denver. We do not have tons and tons of land. Say that you, for whatever reason, want to drive everywhere, don't understand transit, don't know where to build it. Say we need more roads. We're going to have, as Larry said, another 35,000 people. The reality is that we don't want to knock down our existing development to widen those roads. To a great extent, the transportation system we have is the transportation system we have. So whether you drive or take the bus or whatever, you have an interest in how do we use our infrastructure more efficiently. And so transit is a way basically to handle more traffic on the roads we have, which benefits everyone. And so I think as we talk about what we want to have as our community vision, we need to be realistic that we can't have everything we want and tear down the community to make something new. We have to work with where we are. We're a community that's in progress and development, and we need to make adaptations to where we are.
Hi, Mary Layton, City Club member. I want to follow up on something Claire said about we used to give all students a bus pass. And I wonder, that was an awesome way, A, to nurture the habit of using the buses, to equalize the whole thing, get a lot of teenagers with cars off the road, and also made it possible to do field trips in anywhere you wanted to go that was on the system without really very much prep. Everybody had their card. You just waved it. And also LTD then became sort of adjunct to the behavior management system. They were actually really good at that. So I'm wondering, where are the points of leverage that we could use to get that happening again? I think it was the right thing. There was a whole piece of legislation that sort of seemed like accidentally included it, and I don't regret that that piece of legislation is gone, but could we not approach it more directly, and to whom would we address this? How would we approach it?
Unfortunately, I don't have a great answer to that question. I believe that funding had been available from a particular source that then went away, and so I suppose that we would need to look to the state legislature as one potential opportunity to find some kind of programmatic way to bring that funding back. I'm sure we're not the only community who wishes that we could provide that kind of service to our students. So I would assume that speaking with LTD, looking at these regional transportation planning systems that we're doing together and thinking about how can we come together to make that proposal up the chain of command, so to speak, to realize that benefit here locally.
I know only slightly more than Claire does, and my understanding is that a few years ago, maybe 2009 or so, there was something called the BETSI, I think Business and Energy Tax Credit, that somehow was linked to the school bus pass program. And for whatever reason, the legislature didn't renew that. And so LTD had been receiving funding to allow students to get bus passes, and now they're not. And so it's an economic question. We have a really good transit system in our community, but it costs money to operate. And we as a community, LTD as an agency, are constantly having to weigh priorities about, given the funding we have, where do we put that? So the answer could be the legislature, and there's going to be discussions probably next year about more sustained funding for transit operations as a possibility, or if that's important to us as our community, we could look at how to do that.
I will say, and I hope I don't mangle my facts here, that LTD has been able to step up in a small way to support some students in Springfield where they lost their school bus support for students who lived within a certain distance of the school. And LTD has been able to step in and help some of those students get transit passes so they can continue to take the bus to school. It's just one small part of the community, but it still makes a difference.
Hi, James Baldock, City Club member since 2012. I also have a funding question. Your fact sheet says the general operating expense is about $39.1 million. Only $7.1 million of that is from user fees. I'm wondering if self-sufficiency of the program is even on the horizon or a goal for the program, or should we expect our transit system to always be taxpayer-funded?
Take a look at that fact sheet to the very first two bullet points, and I think we're going to make this available to the radio listening audience on the City Club's website. Eugene and Springfield actually had a privately operated transit system in the 60s called Emerald Transit, and they had 18 Volkswagen minibuses that would drive around, and they're a business, and you'd pay for a ride, and you'd go, and they went out of business. And I think the reality in our country is that transit systems are not going to be self-supporting except in particular niche markets, and that's just the reality. So I would have to say I don't think the – no.
Otto Batista, City Club member. I was interested listening to all the answers and all the questions, and it seemed to me that we have the wrong mindset. It seems to me that you can't separate transit and land use. And they are in the same language. I also happen to think that transit is a utility. It's like sewer, water, power, transit. And if we could get a mindset that talked about it as utility, the funding would be easier, the convenience would be easier, it would be integrated in our daily lives. I'm doing a study in Salem right now where we discovered that we give office workers 65 square feet, but we give them 400 square feet for their car. And so I'm curious that, so the question finally gets to the head of the bottle and saying, long-range planning is incredibly important whether you can afford it or not. If we can't dream, we can't play. And if we could get the language to say utility, you could prompt development. Nodal development means that the utility of transit is there and that the developers understand that and they build around it. I happen to think the local routes are more important than the BRT, because if I made a transfer, then development would occur at where I had to wait for my local bus from the BRT, because I would have time to deal with employment or whatever. So the question really is, how do we change the mindset? It just seems to me that's the issue.
This is Larry. I'll take that one. Absolutely right. I think it's more of what we're doing here. It's more conversation, more dialogue, more PR, more inspiration of each other, and getting that word out in the community. And I also think all of through Envision Eugene, it was land use vision, transit vision, and that they're totally intertwined, and you need to be talking about both of those together in the same sentences.
Marty Wilde again, before we wrap up. Just a quick one. I was talking about developing Kesey Square potentially, and I was talking to someone who's in that business, and he said, you know, really the barrier is you make the most money off of parking. He said, so if you own a commercial parking lot downtown, you never want to develop it, because that's the way you're going to make the most money. So I guess my question is then, is it time for a tax on commercial parking downtown?
Whoa.
Any takers?
The elected Claire? Official is right. Declining to answer.
Yeah, no comment on that one. But
it's an interesting idea. Right now, we do require certain parking when we create development, and so we in some ways, our policies are at cross purposes with each other in some of those places. And I think right now, at least in the city of Eugene, city staff and elected officials are looking really closely at those kinds of calibrations. Whether or not we get to that place, I can't say.
And on that note, thank you again to the City Club for hosting today's program. We want to continue this conversation about the role of transit in the next several months. My organization, Better Eugene Springfield Transit, will be hosting discussions all around town to learn about what people think about transit in our community. To learn more, please visit our website, best-oregon.org. That's best-oregon.org. And you'll find cards on your table with that information. And Marty, let's wrap up.
All right. Thank you for bringing clarity and vision to this City Club program on the role of transit in our community vision. Let's show them our appreciation. Welcome to our new members, Kim Thompson, Laurel Henry, and Ron Kilcoyne. And thanks again to our sponsors, Sacred Earth Botanicals, Marilyn Milne Public Relations Services, and to our today's greeter and possible future City Club president, my daughter, Bella. And we will meet again next Friday on February 7th at the Downtown Athletic Club to discuss best outcomes for kids. As a reminder, lunches for this program can be ordered on the City Club's website or by contacting the office to make sure you are served promptly. Thank you.